Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Ashes cricket is always something because as a young kid you want to play in. Coming in before lunch today was probably some of the toughest conditions I've come in my test career so far. So really proud of the work that I've done mentally to be able to overcome nerves and get into the contest as quickly as I possibly can. And I think that comes with a bit of age, a bit of growth and probably a bit of time away from the game to work on certain things.
That was Mitchell Marsh after scoring his third test century overnight. What a moment for him and what an innings. Welcome to Cricket Unfiltered. I'm Menners. It's our wrap of day one of the third test from Headingley. And I've got a super sub joining me. He's a commentator for Cricket Australia. He's also the host of the Red V podcast. So if you like your rugby league and especially the St. George Dragons, check it out. His name's Jack Clifton. Jack, welcome to Cricket Unfiltered. How are you?
Yeah, good, Menners. Thanks for having me on, mate. Excited to chat about what transpired last night.
There's so much to talk about, but I think let's go back to the beginning of play because some big team changes, especially for Australia, they weren't announced prior to play. So Cameron Green picked up a mild hamstring strain and had to be rested from this game to recover. Mm. Mitch Marsh came in, who hasn't played a test match since 2019. He actually took a 5-wicket haul at the Oval in the last Ashes tour in that test match. But quite a stunning move, Jack. They kept the injury pretty quiet. And Mitchell Marsh, I think, has played 4 first-class games in 4 years, makes his return. What was your initial thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think anyone kind of anticipated that was going to be the case. I think there'd been a few little rumours that maybe Cameron Green wasn't at 100%, but I think in this modern day, teams have to work pretty hard to keep that kind of news under wraps, and the Australians certainly did that. I was pretty surprised. Unfortunate, I think, for Cameron Green. He's didn't bowl to his ability in the last test and unfortunately kind of ran into a runaway freight train in Ben Stokes, who was just kind of teeing off. But maybe the rest for him might be beneficial. And as we saw and as we'll speak about in a moment, Menners, Mitchell Marsh certainly took his opportunity with a run of ball 118. So, yeah, a surprising move. I think a lot of Australian cricket fans probably would have been, maybe not critical is probably too strong of a word, but surprised at the selection. They've also got Michael Neeser in the squad, but I think batting him up at number 6 or pushing Alex Carey up to number 6 and having Neeser at 7 or Cummins at 7 probably made the Australian batting a bit thin. Didn't Mitchell Marsh kind of take his opportunity? If that selection hadn't happened, who knows what Australia would have ended up with at the end of this first day, Menners.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I was a bit worried, but Marsh scored a century, took a wicket. You couldn't ask for much more. And then Scott Boland came in for Josh Hazlewood. There has been reports that Hazlewood, coming off an injury in back-to-back tests, might be rested. I'm comfortable with that because I think managing the fast bowlers is something you have to sort of do at close range and see how they go. But I think I can unequivocally say, that Josh Hazlewood is a better bowler than Scott Boland.
Yeah, and I think, I would have been happy if Hazlewood had been selected to play this test, but I know in the modern game that they're looking at the loads of the bowlers. And as you mentioned, Josh Hazlewood's had a pretty rotten run with injury over the last 12 to 18 months and has missed a fair bit of cricket. And it is a long series. Australia may be up 2-0, but they want to be able to save Josh Hazlewood. If England were to jag a game here, then all of a sudden the series is well and truly alive and you need your best players there. So, none of these players are ever going to put their hands up and say, oh, yeah, I don't mind missing this game. It's not like that sense in like it is in park cricket where you don't mind taking a weekend off. But I think Australia in a lucky position, Menas, where they have someone the quality of Scott Boland that can come in. And fingers crossed when the second day does start, if there are overcast skies, if there is a bit of humidity and the ball is swinging and hooping around like it was when Australia was batting, then Scott Boland's probably the perfect player to have there. I think he probably does move the ball a little bit more away from the batters than Josh Hazlewood does. And who knows, that could pay dividends for Australia further down this test match.
Oh, I'd love another 6 for 7 from Scott Boland in this test match. And Todd Murphy came in as expected for Nathan Lyon. So as predicted, also some changes for England, and they strengthened their bowling. So Harry Brook moved up to number 3, Ollie Pope missing the game due to a shoulder injury. He's actually missing the rest of the series. Johnny Bairstow, the dozy wandering keeper, wandered up from 7 to 5. In came Mo Ali, Mark Wood, Chris Wokes, and out went Anderson, Pope, and Tung. So big changes. They've obviously gone for the extra bowling option, which I think is probably sensible. But, as the game stands, England are 195 runs behind Australia's first innings with 7 wickets in hand. And, you know, maybe they will rue not having that extra batter.
Yeah, the top order looks brittle, especially with the fact that you see that Australia got 3 wickets last night. Outside of Root and Stokes, I don't know if there's many players in that top 6 that you can really rely on to consistently score runs. Root's had a good series so far.
If you see Brook coming out at 3 as an opening bowler, you're licking your lips.
Yeah, and I think that's the position that Australia finds himself in at the moment. So, but then England probably think, well, if we didn't strengthen the bowling winning with the batter, we might find ourselves kind of in pursuit of 350, 380, 400. I think the inclusion of Mark Wood was a great one. I'm not sure of all the background information about it, if he wasn't at full fitness for the first couple of tests or what it was. Maybe they didn't think the conditions suited him, but He gave Australia trouble in Australia when we met in the Ashes a few seasons ago. So I think he was always going to cause trouble on his own decks, and just has that express pace that I think can trouble the top order. And I don't think really anyone outside of Mitch Marsh was able to play him comfortably, and ended with a nice hatful of wickets. So that, they've strengthened the bowling to kind of weaken the batting, and it'd be interesting to see as this test moves on, Menas, whether that pays dividends for the Poms or whether they find themselves 50 or 60 runs short. Because I don't think this is going to be a pitch that's going to be easy to bat on, regardless of what time of the match you're out in the middle. We'll talk about the Australian collapse, but maybe 250, 260 might be enough to have a handy 50 or 60 run lead. Although England could turn me into a liar tonight and they could pass 350, 400 and put themselves in command of this test match. It's set up pretty nicely at the moment.
Indeed it is. And as the match stands, Australia were bowled out for 263. Mark Wood with the figures 5 for 34. And in reply, England are 3 for 68 with Root not out 19, Bairstow not out 1. But at the start of play, Ben Stokes won the toss and sent Australia in. Pat Cummins said he would have done the same thing. And that was a good cricket pitch that we saw. There was life early. There's pace in the pitch, which we didn't see in the first two test matches. And I have to say, it was a good cricket wicket because the ball was coming onto the bat, but it was also a bit in it for the quicks.
Oh yeah, it's what a test pitch should be. You and I before have bemoaned the fact that some of the lifeless pitches in Australia, in domestic first class scene, don't give the bowlers and batters a fair go. But this is the perfect type of pitch. I think when England had that new ball, they were able to. I just kind of thought in my analysis that they bowled a lot fuller. Obviously, in the last test, the pitch was a bit lifeless, so they had to bowl a fair proportion of short balls. But I thought they bowled a much fuller length, and that troubled. Obviously, they got the early wicket of Warner, and then there was a bit of a mini partnership. And I think the ball of the innings for me was that tremendous ball from Mark Wood that knocked Usman Khawaja's leg stump flying out of the ground. I think, as a cricket fan, maybe not Australian cricket fans, but you love to see that kind of bowling, but it's got a lot of life in it, and I don't think it's going to be the pitch that is going to necessarily flatten out and get that much easier for batting. If the match makes it to the fourth day, I imagine it's going to start to break up a little bit. There's going to be some footmarks there, and maybe the likes of kind of Todd Murphy and Mo Ali are going to have an opportunity to maybe run right the last couple of days. But it certainly seems like a real goldmine for the pacemen. They've absolutely dominated proceedings in that first day. And to think that 13 wickets fell, that probably gives you a pretty good analysis and shows you, yeah, just how difficult it is to bat on this pitch over there in Leeds.
Oh, definitely. And another fantastic day. I mean, well, just another great day of cricket. So, yeah, Warner was out caught second slip in the first over off Broad for four. And then Khawaja, you're right, got an absolute thunderbolt. And for him, who's seen the ball like a watermelon, to be completely done for pace was terrific stuff from Wood. And then Labuschagne was caught at slip for 21 off Wokes. Again, familiar dismissal we've seen in this series, just playing at one. It's sort of that fifth or sixth off stump line from Labuschagne and just found the edge. And then Steve Smith came to the crease when Khawaja was dismissed and he was booed onto the ground in his 100th test match. So terrific stuff there from the English fans.
Oh, disgusting behavior. It's almost like a replay of what happened in 2019. Like it's, I like to think as a cricket fan, even if you don't like someone personally, you can respect the game first and foremost, and respect that they have the ability to be a tremendous player. Steve Smith is arguably one of the best cricketers to ever face this earth, and maybe kind of in the best batsman we've seen in our generation when you look at his statistics and what he's been able to do. And like I know it doesn't affect Steve. He's probably used to it by now. He's been getting it for a good part of the last kind of 4 or 5 years since all the drama in South Africa. But disappointing. Not surprising, Menas, but still disappointing all the same. I just think there's cheap shots and pot shots given to the Australian fans. But I would like to think that the Australian fans wouldn't be like that with someone that the caliber of Steve Smith. Yeah, sure, boo Stuart Broad because he's a bit of a flog. But
I also think if you watch Broad's performances around Australia, he gets begrudging respect from Australian crowds, and you know he got some cheers at the SCG when he was here last summer, and I think there's the pantomime booing, but maybe in someone's 100th Test match.
It seems incessant towards Smith. So yeah, that was a shame. And then he got a good ball. And I think probably at that stage, England probably thought, well, we can knock Australia for 150 or under.
Australia were 4 for 85. Smith goes inside edge, caught by Bairstow. He reviewed it. It was a tough one. It could have flicked the pad. So he goes and we go to lunch with Marsh and Head not out. And Mitch Marsh actually said that he was really nervous in the little period just before lunch. He was only out there for an over, I think, or over in a bit. And he really had to work hard to get through that and fight his nerves. And, Jack, I got to say to you, when we went off at the lunch break with Marsh and Head not out, I feared that Australia wouldn't make 150 and would be bowling by tea. But then what transpired was we saw one of the great counter-attacking hundreds in Ashes history, Mitch Marsh 100 off 102 balls. It was phenomenal. He ended up making 118 off 118 with 17 fours and four sixes. Mark Wood was bowling almost 95 miles an hour, and he just was smashing them past him and over the fence at mid-wicket. I mean, that was one of the most scintillating passages of play. Head and Mitch Marsh put on 155 in just over 25 overs. I mean, it was incredible.
It was. And there were proper cricket shots as well. He was playing some exquisite cover drives. He played some lovely shots down the ground. He was sweating on anything, a little bit short. There was a couple of times that Broad or Wood or Wokes didn't even bowl short. It was more short of a length, and he just has that ability to pick up the length and was just able to slap it over mid-wicket for six. You see him, He's got such a massive frame. He's so strong. And what we saw last night, Menas, I think has been something that the Australian public has wanted to see for a large portion of Mitch Marsh's career. I think there's always been that incredible potential, obviously coming from the rich lineage of the Marsh family, and his brother Sean obviously played a fair bit of test cricket. Mitch has had a lot of success when it's come to the first class scene here in Australia. but for whatever reason hasn't really come to fruition. He had that 181 against the English at the MCG, but that was probably a pretty dead pitch. I think even you probably could have scored 100 on that wicket. So
maybe not quite.
I don't know if there was a lot of investment necessarily put in that innings, but yeah, I'm really, really happy for him. He's unfortunately kind of been a little bit of kind of public enemy number one here in Australia, which sounds funny, but he's been afforded so many opportunities. But I guess when you see the potential that was there, and no doubt people closer to the Australian cricket team and management have probably seen that more so than you and I, just your kind of average cricket fans have seen, it's understandable why he has got so many opportunities. But who knows, this might be the start of something. I think if nothing else, it's great to have someone scoring runs, if not to be putting pressure on Cameron Green, even just to have that little bit of extra depth. And if there is an injury down the line, then who knows? Yet you might see in that Australia starting 11, whether it's in this series or whether it's the home series against Pakistan, the West Indies, having Cameron Green and Mitch Marsh in the same batting lineup. But I thought it was a tremendous innings, and it was incredible to watch. I just hope that the English fans don't start saying that Mitch Marsh is playing baseball, because there was nothing baseball about that. That was calculated. It was a brilliant counter-attacking innings. It was very, very nice to watch.
Oh, I just love the power and the ferocity, the way he dominated the partnership with Head. And he spoke after the game about the confidence that the management group have given him, Pat Cummins, Andrew McDonald, that they've really supported him, made him feel comfortable. He joked about the fact that he felt like he was on holiday and he scored a century while he was on a Kentucky tour. I mean, he was having a real laugh, and there was magical pictures, if you can find them online, of Jeff Marsh and Sean Marsh watching the century in Bali and celebrating. Sean Marsh is over there celebrating his 40th birthday. So what a moment that must have been for their family. That have all played in Ashes cricket. And also, you know, just Marsh talked about, getting control of his nerves and early in his innings, because, you know, he's a big bloke. If he's nervous, his footwork gets stuck. And, excuse me, Cameron Green's a great player, but Marsh has the unique ability, the way he plays limited overs cricket, to play a counter-attacking innings like the one we saw. I actually don't know if Cameron Green had the capability in that situation to go, you know what, bang, 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 I'm going to start bashing the ball back at you. And apparently Pat Cummins just said to Mitchell Marsh when he was told he was going to be back in the team, I don't mind if you try and hit the first ball for six. And, you know, he was just given that freedom to go out there and play his way. And I got to say, it was some of the most exhilarating batting. And, you know, Australia just a phenomenal innings. But the English only have themselves to blame. So they dropped four chances during the day. The most costly, though, was just after lunch. Marsh was dropped at first slip off the bowling of Wokes by Joe Root when he was just on 12. So that would have made Australia five down just after lunch. And as I said, probably would have been bowling by tea. You know, Butterfingers Besto dropped a few, dropped a couple yesterday. I mean, if you're an English supporter, you should be very frustrated. They've now put down 14 chances this series, two wickets off no balls, plenty of half chances. I mean, it's like, okay, great, your golf game's good. Maybe you should spend a bit of time at catching practice.
Oh, their fielding in this series has been pathetic. It's all good and well to be able to score runs quickly and take wickets at times, but Australia would be in a much more awkward position, not just in this test, but in the series, if England have been able to take their chances. So their bowlers are doing enough to create those opportunities, create those half chances, and at times, more than half chances, full chances was the one with Mitch Marsh. And yeah, Joe Root normally has a safe pair of hands. He's a pretty good first slipper, but yeah, that one, I don't know whether it was a bit of mental fatigue or what it was, but it just went in and went straight out, and that was a really costly one, because that not only cost the 106 runs that Mitch Marsh added after that, but also the partnership. It probably cost them 130 or 140 runs. So instead of kind of chasing 263, they could have been chasing around that 140, 150, 160 mark potentially, if they've been able to take their chances. Their ground fielding's been pretty good, England. We We even saw last night there was a couple of really good diving stops in the outfield. So no concern with their ground fielding. But if I'm Brendan McCullum, I'm quite concerned, and I'm kind of getting the side together and working with my fielding coach to make sure that doesn't happen. Because, gee, I play local seventh grade cricket, and it's not a very high standard. But I think our captain would be pretty pissed off if we put down 14 chances in the space of two games. He'd be getting us to be doing something in our own time. So not acceptable for England, and it's something they desperately need to work on, because if they keep putting down these chances over the course of this test and the next couple of tests, they're going to find themselves on the end of a potential 3-1 or 4-1 scoreline.
Yeah, baseball's not catching practice, not the baseball way. I don't know if you noticed, but Australia might have actually scored 265 runs, because there was a dubious stop on the boundary. Yeah. It looks like Ben Stokes was trying to stop the ball and it hit the rope or the foam thing. And for some reason, the third umpire didn't give it four runs. And, you know, strange. I thought, you know, Ben Stokes, who was right there, probably knew it hit the boundary, would, you know, signal for the way he wants to play cricket, for the spirit of cricket. But I guess not. I guess spirit of cricket didn't suit him at that moment. So Mitch Marsh goes just before tee, frustrating for him. He said afterwards how frustrated he was, because he had the England attack at his mercy, but the score was 240, inside edge onto thigh pad, goes into gully, I think, and is caught off Woke. So he goes just before the tee break, actually ended up being the last ball, because they went off then and broke that 155-run partnership. And then we saw one of the most electrifying spells of fast bowling I've seen in a while. Mark Wood knocked over the tail. He got Stark, Cummins, Murphy, Carey. He ended up with figures of 5 for 34. Australia crashed from 4 for 240, all out for 263, losing 6 for 23 at the end. Wood's average pace was over 90 miles an hour. His quickest was around 96 miles an hour. And he just cut through the tail very, very quickly. You know, a shame that we couldn't wag the tail and get that score up around 350. But in the end, I think it just highlights to me how well Mitch Marsh played.
Yeah, it certainly does. And full credit to Mark Wood, bowled really well. As I said, he troubled the Australians over here in Australia a couple of summers ago. So he's a really good bowler, and he's one of the, and England probably haven't had someone, like, I know Jofra Archer did it in patches in the last time that Australia was over there in the UK, but you kind of probably got to go back to the days of Darren Goff, where they had someone with that express pace that likes to bowl short, can really hurry up the batsman, but has the ability to bowl that full ball and is able to move the ball through the air, like what we saw with Khawaja. So yeah, it could potentially be a match defining or a match changing spell from Mark Wood if the England batters can get their finger out and can try and chip away at this lead. So yeah, but back to your point, Menace. Most definitely, it shows that Mitch Marsh was playing at a different level. And I think when you can do that, when the conditions aren't easy, it's all good and well to be able to score 120, 130 when you're playing on a fairly flat track and there's other players around you that are scoring runs, or you come in at 4 for 250. But he came in a very precarious position. Hasn't played much cricket at all, hasn't played a test match since 2019, and was able to come in and dominate the attack really after being given a chance. And yeah, it seemed calculated. It wasn't if he was trying to hit the cover off the ball and trying to play a T20 style. Like he was being calculated in his approach. He was playing some glorious shots that once it got through the infield, there was no doubt that it was going to reach the boundary. It was lifting some other shots over.
Well, they
the boundary.
Were also they also went short and full to him at a while. They were trying to bounce him and then york him, and he was just waiting for the over pitch half volley and belting it through the offside. There were some big gaps there, and you know, played some vicious pull shots over the fence on the onside. So Australia all out 263 just into the last session, and you know, they started the last session dropping Carey. It didn't cost them, but you know, that's part of their 14 in the series. And then after the innings break, it was Pat Cummins who ripped through the England top order, had Ben Duckett caught by Alex Carey for just two, a terrific catch from Carey going to his left high, just got it in the tips of his gloves. I mean, Carey is having a brilliant series behind the sticks.
He's developing into a world-class wicketkeeper. And English fans can say what they want about what happened in the previous test, but that showed high cricket IQ to notice that Bairstow had been drifting out of his crease. And he took a marvellous catch in that second test as well, where he leapt high and was able to pluck the ball out of the sky, almost like a soccer goalkeeper. So, yeah, he's really developing. Unfortunately, kind of missed out with the bat a little bit earlier on. But you look back to the World Test Championship final against India, you look to the series in Pakistan, he's come up with some really handy innings at number seven, not necessarily coming out and scoring a century, but chipping away with a valuable 50 or 60. And his keeping skills have been magnificent. Tim Payne was brought in as captain and brought in as a keeper because they thought he was the best keeper in the country. Well, I don't think there's any doubt that Alex Carey is not only the best keeper in Australia, he's probably one of the best keepers in the world at the moment with some of the takes that we've seen from him. He's put some marvellous performances together. And that just shows the difference between Australia and England. Johnny Bairstow put down two chances he really should have snapped up, whereas Alex Carey gets one that maybe if he did drop it, people might have said, oh, okay, that was a bit of a tough chance, but he takes it and he puts Australia on top early on. And just quickly on Pat Cummins, Menas, his ability to get wickets early on is like, should not be understated, should not be undervalued. He did it 4 years ago. He does it home in Australia. He's obviously got the weight of the captaincy on him now, but his ability to just get those wickets in the first kind of first, second, third, fourth overs and put the opposition on the back foot is incredible. He's been in really fine touch and is performing really well with the new ball.
He looks pissed off too. He's like, all right, you've poked me. Now I'm going to poke back. He was bowling quick. He celebrated those dismissals. Yeah, I love the way Carey's really improved since he got picked in the side. I think we're seeing with the bat and with the gloves, him just getting better and better and better. And, you know, you and I have both been lucky to you know, have dealings with him at domestic level all the time. And if any person embodies the spirit of cricket the way they carry themselves, it's Alex Carey. So fine catch from him.
Manners, do you anticipate Adam Gilchrist doing any type of work with Carey? I know he's well involved in the media, Gilly, but would they be working together, do you think?
I think there is a little bit of a keepers club in Australia. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a WhatsApp group with Gilly, Heels, Carey, Brad Haddon, absolutely. Jimmy Pearson would be in there now because he was over there. Josh Inglis, there'd be a little keeping group where they probably just take pot shots at Johnny Bairstow all day. all right. And then Harry Brook was caught by Steve Smith in slips, I think. Second slip off the bowling of Cummins for three. A predictable dismissal for him, just poking at a good length ball. And then Root came out, and actually Root and Crawley put on 43 together and, you know, looking pretty good. But then Mitchell Marsh, golden arm day continues, comes on and gets Crawley just poking at one, edges it to first slip. Australia didn't drop it, and that meant England were 3 for 65. Root and Bairstow survived the rest of the day. Mm. They put Bazball away for a few overs sensibly and got through to stump. So England are 195 runs behind with 7 wickets in hand. Jack, final assessment. My feeling is that things are pretty even at the moment. But if I'm Australia, runs on the board, Stokes is next, and then Mo Ali, and then you're into Wokes, Wood, Robinson, and Broad. I fancy my chances of knocking England over for under 200.
Well, I was messaging you last night while watching the coverage, and I said, and this was admittedly when the score was 4 for 85, but I said, well, 250 might be kind of a match-winning total here, if not a match-winning total, a very, very good total. And I think the 3 wickets from Australia have proved that. I think the first kind of 30 to 45 minutes will be really key for the Aussies and for England for that matter. If England can kind of get through that nasty little period where the ball is going to be moving around and the Australian bowlers are fresh, I think that could pay dividends for either side. If Australia were able to get 2 or 3, then yeah, I'm all with you, Menas. They could blast England out for less than 150. But Stokes is going to be confident after the last test. He's probably going to have that Australian hatred running through his veins and his blood after what happened in the previous test. So yeah, I think it's set up really nicely. If I was kind of giving my assessment, I would say to use a boxing analogy, Australia probably just ahead on points by getting that third wicket last night, and as you mentioned, runs on the board. But it's perfectly set up. It's been a great series so far, and yeah, I can't wait to see night two after I watch my fledgling Dragons no doubt get smashed by Canberra tonight.
So Jack, thanks very much for joining me for this wrap of day one. Where can the listeners find the Red V podcast?
on all good podcast providers, main ones are Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So yeah, we do. Yeah, full match reviews, basically everything about the Dragons. So even if you're not a Dragons fan, a footy fan, and you want to hear a couple of young to middle-aged guys ranting about how bad the Dragons are and how bad the Lives are, feel free to tune in. You can also find us on our socials at Red V Podcast One on Twitter and Red V Podcast on Instagram and Facebook as well.
Oh, terrific stuff. You're doing a great job with the show, and we're actually part of the same Sports Social UK podcast network, ironically, after the last episode. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the wrap of day one. A special thanks to the countless listeners that reached out after the last episode. Mad Men as brand has never been hotter, but it meant a lot to hear from you all. So thanks, everybody. You know, received an overwhelming response. Really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll be back with a wrap of day two.
This is a Piccolo podcast production.
Sports Social Podcast Network.